good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering tonight, Tuesday, December 23rd, 2014. The former SPLM detainees are calling on the two warring parties to end the conflict in South Sudan.
If we fail to reach an agreement as South Sudanese, particularly the warring parties, then the IGAD countries should impose it. And if the two warring parties defy the IGAD region, then the IGAD countries should seek the support of our continent.
And South Sudanese refugees in Uganda say even though life is tough, they will not return to South Sudan until there is peace.
Addressing the root cause of the conflict, that will motivate me to go back to the country. But without settling the root cause of the crisis that has sparked the war in December, then that is a big problem. There's a lot of worries that we may not go back soon.
We'll have these stories and more coming up shortly on South Sudan in Focus. The former SPLM detainees are calling on President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar to negotiate in good faith to end South Sudan's year-long conflict. Pagana Mum says if the two warring parties fail to sign a peace accord, the United Nations Security Council and the African Union should impose an agreement on the country. He says the SPLM in opposition and the Kiir administration are not serious about ending the conflict.
One of the outstanding issues was whether to have a president and a prime minister in the leadership of the transitional government or to have a president, a vice president, a prime minister, and two deputy prime ministers and a cabinet in the leadership of the transitional government. Instead of addressing this matter, now the two warring parties are retracting, withdrawing, from this understanding and are in total withdrawal from peace. This is very dangerous.
In the absence of peace, how do you see the behavior of the two parties impacting on the future of South Sudan?
Our appeal now is to the people of South Sudan to encourage, pressure, persuade, cajole President Kiir and Dr. Riek Machar to make peace now. If they fail to make peace, then we call on the IGAD region to put on the table a peace agreement that the South Sudanese parties can live with.
Mr. Pagan, I hate to sound pessimistic, but in case the two parties continue with their blame game, what is the best solution for ending this conflict in South Sudan?
If we fail to reach an agreement as South Sudanese, particularly the warring parties, then the IGAD countries should impose it. And if the two warring parties defy the IGAD region, then the IGAD countries should seek the support of our continent. Then the last resort would be to seek the international community intervention through the Security Council of the United Nations, because South Sudan cannot and should not be allowed to fall into chaos and widen the areas of disorder and chaos in this continent.
What is the solution of your group, the former detainees? We know that you have been part and parcel of the negotiation. What is your solution to these problems?
Our position is very clear. We are for peace. We are for a peace agreement that would establish government of national unity with the participation and leadership of both warring parties, President Kiir and Dr. Riek Machar, with the participation of all the political forces in the country, including SPLM, former SPLM leaders, former political detainees, and the other political parties, an inclusive government that would implement a reform agenda which will rebuild the state in South Sudan, reconcile and heal the nation of South Sudan, and hand over power to the people of South Sudan who will elect their government of discussion.
Yeah, and why do you think these two parties are behaving the way they are behaving right now? Because we really don't understand why they want to really insist on hardline position. Why do you think they are behaving like that?
They are lacking the desire to see South Sudan return to peace. And this is very unfortunate. Also, it is very clear that the two comrades are allowing themselves to be cornered and boxed by their constituencies that are getting radicalized against each other. And I'm calling on the people of South Sudan, particularly their two constituencies, the larger population of South Sudan, the region, and the international community. Now it's time to make peace before it is too late and before South Sudan collapses into chaos and disorder.
Pagan Amun is a former detainee who has been attending the peace talks in Ethiopia. He is former SPLM Secretary General and one of the politicians President Kiir accused of attempting to overthrow the government last December. Yesterday, Information Minister Michael Makuei accused the SPLM in opposition of making new demands at the Addis Ababa talks that he said led to their collapse. South Sudan in Focus could not reach SPLM in opposition for reaction to Makuei's accusation. The governor of Western Bahr al-Ghazal state denies his government is arresting people in Wau. Rizik Zakaria Hassan says security officials are searching rebel supporters allied to the SPLM in opposition. Hassan accuses rebels led by former Vice President Riek Machar of destabilizing South Sudan by recruiting youth. He says the state will not allow rebels to operate in Western Bahr al-Ghazal.
Apart from the last April insecurities which have been caused by the defections of some forces from Mapel and Wau is calm and stable, and there's nothing, no serious activities which we can talk about.
All right. And we are hearing reports that a lot of youth are being arrested in Wau. We don't know why they are being arrested. Can you tell us what is happening exactly among the youth in Wau?
Excuse me. In fact, when you say a lot of youth, I think we should be specific, quantifying how many. Because so far what happened, as you know, Riek Machar and his rebel group, they are intending to destabilize the whole republic. That's why they extended their tentacles, their hands to the state. And as all of you know, they had managed to mobilize somebody by name Kingo Peter, whom he had assigned and appointed as a chair for the state, plus some others whom he had actually managed to hunt from those who are lightering Khartoum. Those Kingo and his colleagues, they are now trying to mobilize some youth to penetrate the state so that they should mobilize and gain momentum. That is actually what had happened within the last few weeks. And out of this, they had managed to mobilize tens, like high of 40 plus youth. And these youth, actually, they are mobilizing, taking them to Darfur, especially to the areas of Al-Fardos for the mobilization, for the training. These youth had fallen into ambush in the state of northern Bahr al-Ghazal, and three of them were being apprehended by the security agents of within that state. And then, fortunately enough, the three of them were being brought to Wau, of which they managed to expose their inner network. This is actually what had happened within the last 2 weeks.
And how many people are in this inner network that the three managed to expose?
So far, these are security issues, and I think the investigations and the rounding is still going on. So far, the three whom were being apprehended, they exposed their inner network. This is what we are now handling.
Governor Zakaria, I remember in August, there were also youth who were working for the UN who were also arrested, and we don't know why they were arrested. Could you talk about that also?
Yeah, actually, these youth, they have connection with Riek Machar, and six of them were being taken, apprehended by the security, and I think the investigation now is going on with them.
And how would you react to, some sentiments from sections of people in Western Bahr al-Ghazal who are saying that people there are living in fear because they say if you speak, you will be picked and arrested.
And I think we are human beings and we believe in freedom of expression. We believe on oppositions, we believe on criticism because criticism, in fact, teach us about our weak points. That's why we respect democracy and freedom. And we never apprehended a person just because of per se. We never. And if there is any, I challenge you, let them come out clearly and expose our wicked activities, if there are any.
Rizig Zakaria Hassan is the governor of Western Bahr el-Ghazal State. He was speaking to me earlier today from WOW. We now hear what South Sudanese refugees are speaking in Uganda. Some refugees say they have no hope that a peace agreement will be reached anytime soon, despite the on and off talks taking place in Ethiopia. The talks between government and rebel negotiators collapsed again just a few days ago. Most refugees say they fear returning home unless the key perpetrators of violence on both sides are apprehended. For VOA News, Bonifacio Taban has this report from Kampala.
Angelina Nyaliev is the mother of three children who fled conflict in Unity State, both within and outside a United Nations Protection of Civilian camp in South Sudan. Peace was the last thing she was able to contemplate as she and other South Sudanese women endured harsh conditions in various UN camps. It was a far cry from her life as a farmer in Leir County before the conflict began. In fact, Nyaliev said he can't even imagine returning to South Sudan anytime in the near future.
I cannot believe that there will be peace because we have seen a lot of problems, unless it will take 10 years for one to return to South Sudan. We have had a lot of peace negotiations, but still fighting continues. We cannot trust the two leaders due to the killing of civilians. I will not agree even though peace comes, and I will never sign for repatriation.
For Nyaliev, peace would mean something different than the signing of a treaty between the two warring parties or an end to the gunfire. It must also include an end to the suffering of vulnerable women who are subjected to near daily rape in areas most affected by the conflicts. Nyaliev said he witnessed several cases of rape in Bentiu.
Most women, including a mother of a one-week-old baby, have been raped. This happens when women go to collect firewood. I was among the group and I was lucky enough to run away. Some of us were captured and forced into sexual intercourse. And up to now, the game for the men continues, leaving the women and the children vulnerable.
Gordon Lam is a South Sudanese refugee living in Kampala, who was once a humanitarian worker in South Sudan, but forced to abandon his job due to the threat of ethnic targetings. This day, he spends most of his day idle in Kampala. Lam said he would like to see the two warring parties confront the genesis of the conflicts. He said such a step would likely pave the way to avoiding reoccurrence of more mistakes.
Addressing the root cause of the conflict, that will motivate me to go back to the country. But without settling the root cause of the crisis that has sparked the war in December, then there is a big problem. There's a lot of worries that we may not go back soon because the same scenario may take place and people will be displaced again. That is a major fear at the moment.
Lam said he would only be willing to return home if a strong government system was put in place, if he saw proof of better security measures established to protect civilians.
The peace that will motivate me to go to the country, it is when I see the government that is in place has worked hard to implement the agreement and then also address the justice part of the conflict. Then I will have hope that if I go, the perpetrators of the conflict will refrain from violence, from using the violence.
He said it is important to develop strong policies that would include the voice of all people, not just a few. Lam believes South Sudan's problems are largely due to weak constitution that does not address the right of all civilians. Brooke Irwe, another South Sudanese who fled Juba last December after the initial fighting broke out, though he left his job as an accountant behind and has no steady income, he will only return home when all South Sudanese work together for change and unity of country.
God was not mistaken when he created the 63 tribes who are now living in South Sudan as eligible citizens by birth and by nationality. So I must go to South Sudan to contribute positively on relying a peaceful coexistence between South Sudanese community.
Refugees here say life is becoming tougher every day as they await their monthly rations from UNHCR. Some describe their camp condition as horrific, but have no plan to return to South Sudan until the violence ends and a peace agreement is reached. For BOA News, I'm Boniface Yetaban, reporting from Kampala.
You are still listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at the number of journalists killed in 2014. That story is coming up next after this break.
South Sudan in Focus listeners can find us on the following shortwave frequencies: 11900, 13870, and 15180 kilohertz. We're also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you believe in revenge?
Someone that has done something to hurt you, you are going to pay back. Maybe you do more than what the person has done and it will cause something else, so you just let it go.
Sure, I believe in revenge because certain things are very hard to take.
I think in such circumstances, because we have all got there, how bad it is to revenge and what are the consequences of actually taking a revenge, which always lead to destructions of properties, a lot of killings, all those stuff. So for me personally, I don't believe in revenge. I believe in dialogue, whereby people have to come and talk together and see that each other's interests and settle issues down.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. In our health segment tonight, we take a look at Ebola. The word unprecedented was used a lot this year to describe the Ebola epidemic in West Africa. It has killed more than 7,000 people and infected more than 19,000. The virus had spent decades in isolated forests on the other side of the continent, popping up imminently and killing a few hundred people at a time at most. But in West Africa, Ebola crossed borders and reached cities, sparking global alarm, and the epidemic is still not under control. VOA's Anne Luke takes a look back on Ebola in 2014.
Getting your temperature taken has become the norm at airports and border crossings around West Africa this year. Fever is one of the first symptoms of Ebola. In the three hardest-hit countries, Guinea, Sierra Leone, and Liberia, people try not to shake hands or hug. You are not supposed to care for your sick or bury your dead as before. The bodily fluids of Ebola patients and victims spread the disease. The regional epidemic is not under control, not even in southeastern Guinea, where it began in December 2013. Months passed before the virus was identified. Ebola spread to the capital, Conakry, and then crossed into Sierra Leone and Liberia. Cases began to surge in those two countries in June. Ebola was new to West Africa. There was confusion, miscommunication, and fear. Some people resisted treatment and safe burials. People in a Monrovia suburb rioted. Governments responded with what they called shock therapies, like area lockdowns and quarantines. They increased education efforts. Billboards went up. Ebola is real, they said. Health workers walked the streets, teaching people about the symptoms. They continue to go door to door, looking for possible cases.
don't know as to whether you have any sick person, somebody suffering from malaria, fever, typhoid, pressure.
To stop the spread of Ebola, the sick must be isolated and treated by trained staff wearing head-to-toe protective gear. Those who die from Ebola must be buried by special crews. But response efforts couldn't keep up. Ebola had laid bare these countries' already inadequate health systems, and then it crippled them even further. Sierra Leone's health minister, Dr. Abubakar Fofana.
I can probably count with my fingers the number of ambulances that we had when the outbreak was declared. And for a population of 6 million people in a terrain as difficult as the one that we had.
By September in Monrovia, the number of cases was doubling every 3 weeks. Regular hospitals were closed. There weren't enough beds or staff at Ebola treatment units. Jackson Nyama, a Liberian medic working for Doctors Without Borders, addressed the UN Security Council by teleconference.
We have to turn people away, and they are dying at our front gate. Right now, as I speak, there are patients sitting at our front gate, literally begging for lives. If the international community does not stand up, we will be wiped out.
The UN launched a regional Ebola mission. The United States sent 3,000 troops to build Ebola treatment units in Liberia. October was the start of a massive scale-up in international response that continues into 2015. Experts say there are still months of work ahead. About half of those killed by Ebola this year were in Liberia. Most of the rest were in Guinea and Sierra Leone. In all, 8 countries on 3 continents reported cases. It was, as people kept saying, unprecedented. Those killed included some 350 health workers in West Africa. Sierra Leone lost 3 doctors in the first half of December alone. But there were some victories. About 40% of those infected this year who received medical care survived. Senegal and Nigeria acted fast and contained small outbreaks in their countries. And the sheer scale of the regional epidemic jump-started stalled research efforts into Ebola worldwide. Trials for vaccines and possible drug treatments are underway and have raised hope for an effective response to Ebola sometime in the near future. Anne Look, VOA News, Dakar.
And now from Ebola, we take a look at the global media environment. A press freedom group says at least 60 journalists have been killed this year while doing their job, with members of the international press making up a particularly high percentage of the death. The New York-based Committee to Protect Journalists issued its annual report Tuesday documenting journalist deaths in 21 countries in 2014. It says local journalists continue to be the most targeted, but that 23% of those killed were international journalists. By comparison, the local press makes up 90% of the CPJ's database of journalist deaths dating back to 1992. The report attributes the uptick to the increasing volatile nature of conflict zones in which Westerners are often targeted. Syria was by far the most dangerous country for journalists, with 17 deaths this year. 5 journalists were killed in both Iraq and Ukraine, while 4 deaths happened in Somalia during the war between Israel and Palestine militants. And now we take a look at the preparations for the Christmas celebrations. In Jonglei, officials say they have taken measures to ensure the safety of people who want to return home for the holidays. As residents prepare for the festive season, the government says it will protect displaced people currently sheltering in UN camps should they choose to celebrate Christmas outside the camps. For VOA News, Jacoba Chek reports from the state capital, Bor.
The local government and law enforcement minister says the state is working with the central government to ensure residents can celebrate Christmas peacefully. While Athiu Madol is urging residents displaced to other parts of South Sudan to return to their home in Jonglei State to celebrate Christmas and the New Year. Without giving specifics, Madol says the state government is deploying more security forces across the 6 counties controlled by pro-government forces.
I think people will be celebrating in peace. Our government, the government of Jonglei, we have distributed forces to the Payams, and the commissioners have been instructed to assure that all these celebrations will go without any hindrance or any fear to the population. Especially people, they can come and enjoy celebration. The security is well in place. There's no problem. The rebels are away from here.
The government chief whip in the state assembly, Deng Ajang Dot, assured Jonglei state residents that their safety is paramount.
This year, we are very happy that our government has done what it could to put the security in its place. And I assure those who may hear me that this year we will celebrate Christmas in peace.
Hundreds of thousands of South Sudanese have been displaced over the past year. Aguin Deng Aguer recently returned to Jonglei State from a camp for internally displaced persons in Lake State.
We are now preparing for Christmas. Last year we did not celebrate because of crisis. We wish we are going to celebrate the Christmas very well. There is no insecurity again, so I think, and we need peace to come.
Abraham Dan Akoi says he lost some relatives in the fighting last Christmas. He says part of Bor are relatively peaceful, but people are still suffering from the fighting that broke out around Christmas time last year. Akoi is hoping for a peaceful Christmas celebration.
Yeah, I think many people are busy doing something like making shopping, doing activities, cleaning everything. I think this year in God Week, something will be different. I'm prepared to make something. Because that's why you see me here. I'm walk around to buy something to my family, my children. So that's why I'm here in the market.
Today, hundreds of Bor residents, especially young people, were busy shopping for new clothes for Christmas. For BOA News, I'm Jacob Achek in Bor.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Endena Beled Jadid by Ras Corby. We have been listening to Ras Corby with the song Indina Beled Jadid. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.